Now, friends, as has been already announced, the topic for today's discussion for the next 35-40 minutes or so is on the subject resist not evil. After the talk, we will have around 10 or 15 minutes for any questions or any points on the subject. Now, there is a verse in the New Testament, Gospel according to Saint Matthew, chapter 5, which says this: I say unto you, Jesus says, I say unto you that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. This is the verse. And from this comes the topic of our discussion, resist not evil. So we should ask the question, what is evil? Broadly, what do we think is evil? That's the question we have to ask. If we think about it, the first thing that comes to our mind is the harm that comes to us from outside, our enemies, so-called enemies. Just look at your life. There are set of people who are friendly to you, who are helpful to you, they're benefactors, and there are others who trouble you, whether knowingly or unknowingly. And in that category also belongs people who mere look irritate, whose very actions will irritate you and trouble you, who cause a lot of distress to us. And they do something knowingly or unknowingly, and it puts obstacles on our way to happiness. We all have such group of people in our life, and we come across them in various relationships. In family, marriage, in-laws, in the family in which we are born, our blood relations, our workspace, when we do business with others, we come across such friends and enemies in courts, in all places. What we have to ask is, how was this feeling of friendliness or animosity generated? Where does this arise from? We need to ask this question and try to find an answer to this in order to understand our subject, resist not evil. What the ancient science says is that nothing that happens to us is by chance or by accident. Nothing is by chance or accident. Whatever we are facing today, the relationship that we have today with others is what has been forged by our own hands in the long past, in the many lives which we have lived before. The past feelings and acts and thoughts and emotions, nothing is lost, but it manifests itself and expresses itself at the appropriate time in the various relationships that we have with others. So this is not something that a God who is sitting out there decides that these both become enemies, these both will have certain relationship. There is nothing like that. We find that in the Gita, Krishna says that I am the same to all creatures, I know not hatred nor favor. And does not Jesus also says the same thing when he says, be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. So whatever we are reaping today in terms of our relationship with others, the good that they bring to us and the harm that comes to us through them is what we have sown. The first thing to understand. So, as we read in the Dhammapada, all that we are as a person, our faculties, our capacities, our powers, and the relationship that we have with others, friendly, inimical, indifferent, what they bring to us, the events of life, the fortunes and misfortunes, all this is a result of what we have thought. All that we are is founded on our thoughts and formed of our thoughts. That's what Lord Buddha says. So, these feelings, these links, these bonds of like and dislike has been forced by us in the past. And we need not express our feelings of animosity through an act. The very feeling itself is action. The very feeling itself will go a long way and start a long chain of cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect, which will work itself out in the various circumstances and events of life, which appears accidental, which appears as fortunate or misfortunate. Those feelings itself are most potent. Feelings, thoughts, emotions. When we die, the body dies, but the energy that is generated, the force that is generated, is not gone. The magnetic links that we have developed, engendered, links of likes and dislikes, of love and hate, remains. And when we come back again, that works itself out in the various circumstances, in the various events. The law of nature is such that it tends towards harmony. There is a tendency in the universe towards restoring equilibrium. And if we have generated something which puts this equilibrium, makes imbalance in this web of life, then the tendency is to restore equilibrium, and we face the consequences of it in this process of restoration. And this is why we find when in Mahabharata, when Yaksha asked the question to Yudhishthira, we should carefully see what the answer of Yudhishthira is. Yaksha asks first, who is the friend for the sick person? Yudhishthira answers, doctor is the friend of the sick person. Then Yaksha asks, who is the friend of one who is going to die? Yudhishthira says, charity is the only friend of one who is going to die. Then Yaksha asks, what is the best among the dharmas? All the duties, what is the best among the duties, dharmas? Yudhishthira answers, non-violence is the best among the dharmas. This is not merely an emotional thing, a sentimental thing, but based on an immutable law of life, ever-active law of life. So, if we remember that the feelings that we have towards others have such great effect that when we die, it doesn't die, but we have to come back and work out the differences that we have, work out the various relationships that we have built with others, then we will be quick to end our quarrels. We will be quick to recognize this and not postpone this day of reconciliation. Day of reconciliation. It is said in the teachings that these tendencies that we engender, these feelings that we engender, if it is not repressed, if it is not overcome, if counteracting causes are not set, these feelings go for three lives. The intensity is such that it goes for three more lives. So what is necessary is repressing such tendencies of animosity, elimination of defects, and setting up causes of different nature. Other thing that we understand in this context is, when somebody harms us, there is no point in blaming them. In whatever relationship, however sure we may be that that person is the sole cause for our misfortune, there is absolutely no reason for us to blame that person. There is a saying that the hand that smites you is your own hand. The misfortune that comes to us, to others, whether they do it knowingly or unknowingly, is only the adjustment of effects, the causes of which we have sown. The law of life is so accurate, so perfect, so full of justice, such that whatever we haven't sown, whatever we haven't caused, we will not feel the effects of it. So if something is coming to us, as Jesus says, if something is coming to us, then we have sown the causes of it, and therefore we are facing the effects. It comes through others, they are just the instruments through which we are facing the results of our own actions, the consequences of our own actions. There is a very nice story in Mahabharata which illustrates this. Shukracharya's daughter Devayani and Devayani's friend is the daughter of the king, who is Vrishaparva. Devayani and Sharmishte, the daughter of Vrishaparva, one day go to forest and some misunderstanding arises, and Devayani is insulted by Sharmishte, who is the daughter of the king. So Devayani is offended and she is full of anger towards Sharmishte. And she resolves that she will never enter the capital of Vrishaparva and asks her friends to go and inform it to Shukracharya, who is the king's guru. So Shukracharya is a great sage, he could have done anything powerful, and also the king's guru himself. But what does Shukracharya say? He comes to meet Devayani, comforts her and says this. He says, I quote, Devayani, it is by their own actions, good or bad, that men are happy or miserable. The virtues or vices of others will not affect us in the least, unquote. This is the teaching, he says. And this is true Sanatana Dharma, which is based on this law, the scientific law of life, which says that insult and trouble and misfortune that comes to us through others is not their making. It is we who have sown these causes of animosity, of resentment and so on, of all these negative feelings, which will work itself out, and during that restoration of balance we feel the effects of it. And in the same context Vyasa adds this. He says, he conquers the world who patiently puts up with the abuse of his neighbors. Who patiently puts up with the abuse of his neighbors. He who controls his anger as a horseman breaks an unruly horse is indeed a charioteer, and not he who merely holds the rein but lets the horse go whither it would. He who sheds his anger just as a snake its slough is a real hero. He who is not moved despite the greatest torments inflicted by others will realize his aim. He who never gets angry is superior to the ritualist who faithfully performs for 100 years the sacrifices ordained by scripture. So here we see sage Vyasa saying such an important statement, that control of anger, control of those negative emotions, tendencies, is far, far superior than religious performances of rituals and ceremonies for next 100 years. Because this is based on that law of life, the law of karma. And this what Shukracharya advises to Devayani and what Vyasa, you know, adds to that is not resisting evil. That is not resisting evil. And how many opportunities we have in our life? Every moment is an opportunity. Every moment is an opportunity. And let's look at our own life. We'll see so many people around us against whom we have something, or who have done something to us, therefore we hold resentment. Whether knowingly or unknowingly, we harbor those ill feelings towards them. So in this context, if we see, we are only postponing the day of reconciliation and creating more problems for ourselves. Till those adjustments are done, they keep crossing our paths in this life, in the next life, and so on, and putting obstacles in our way. And these obstacles are not created by them again, but through our own hands we are placing these obstacles. And there is this Sufi saint, Yunus Emre, who advises the very same thing in a very poetic way. I'll read this couple of verses. He says, "Whomever you tend to despise, hold dear instead. Don't belittle others, respect them. This is where the path leads. If your heart is filled with love, your way is sacrifice. Through sacrifice, you will find your place in the ranks of love. Hearts which truly love the truth will open a door wide. Dismantle the house of selfishness. Put away your self-regard. High and low, enemy, neighbor, the friend serves them all. Whoever wants to spread this word must first go out of his home." Which home? The home of selfishness. So the dismantling that home of selfishness and self-regard is based on the law that others are not evil. Evil is not coming from outside. Evil is the causes that we have generated, and it is working itself out through the various circumstances of life, through the various events of life, through the various relationships that we have. So it is easy to love our friends. It is easy to be charitable to those who are good to us. It is also easy to be good to strangers. But what is necessary is to take especial pains to generate feelings of goodwill towards those who have harmed us, towards those who have troubled us, towards those whom we call as enemies. And what illustrious examples that we have in the various scriptures. For example, during the 14 years of Vanavasa for the Pandavas, Karna instigates Duryodhana that we should take advantage of their position, of their circumstance. We should go camp next to them where they have camped and display our wealth and power and cause as much trouble as possible to Pandavas. So Duryodhana and Dushyasana and Karna and all the whole army goes to camp next to the Pandavas and trouble them as possible. And as fate would have it, the Gandharvas have occupied the place, are there. The Gandharvas, who are the army of Chitrasena, the king of Gandharvas, and Duryodhana orders them out, "Get out, this is my kingdom. I want to enjoy the beauty, and then this is my kingdom." So Gandharva says, "We don't care about you. You go do what you want." So Duryodhana and the army foolishly tries to attack the Gandharvas, and his whole army of the Duryodhana is defeated, and Duryodhana and all of them are insulted. Duryodhana is captured, Karna and Dushasana run away, and then the Kaurava's army come praying to Pandava, saying that, see, this happened, we came to trouble you, but the Gandharvas have captured Duryodhana now, what to do, please help us. So Bhima says, this fellow came to trouble us, this fellow has already given us so much trouble, now he has also come to trouble us even in the forest when we are in Vanavasa, why should we help you, go and help your own king. So Yudhishthira says, brother, why are you talking such evil things? It is our duty to help him. It doesn't matter what he has done to us. What we ought to do and what is good for us is doing our duty, doing our dharma. And the dharma of a kshatriya, as also a dharma of being attentive to Duryodhana, necessitates that we go to his help. We help him and we ensure that he is safe and released. So you and Arjuna go and do whatever it takes to release Duryodhana from the bonds of Chitrasena. So here we see again such illustrious example of returning good for evil. Returning good for evil. Current tendency is retaliation. The present model of life is retaliation and suing the people, taking them to the court of law, ensuring that one's personal justice is met, and doing whatever it takes to ensure that the other person is put in his place. But this will only create more problems for us, that's what we understand. So Bhima and Arjuna goes and wages war with Chitrasena, and finally through a political dialogue they settle it. And Duryodhana is released through the help of Pandavas. Very interesting story. So this is Sanatana Dharma, and as Buddha says, those who understand this end their quarrel soon. End their quarrel soon. Resisting evil would be when harm comes to us, retaliating it, retaliating, resenting it, harboring ill feelings, and ensuring that the other person is meets the same fate as he tried to do for us. But not resisting evil is understand law of life. It's not emotional, it's not merely sentimental, it's based on this law of life that nothing comes to you by accident, nothing comes to you by accident. And this charitable attitude which comes out of this understanding and wisdom was esteemed as highest by Saint Paul. Saint Paul says that it's not any great powers that you have over nature and the riches that you have, all that doesn't matter, what matters is charity. He says, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not the charity, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. So forgiveness is seen as forgiveness and charitable attitude is seen as something which is supreme. And Gospel according to Saint Matthew, as we read, also says the same thing. He says, Jesus says, you have heard that it has been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thy enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sendeth rain on the just and the unjust alike. For if you love them which love you, what reward have you? Do not even the publicans the same? And if you salute your brethren only, what do you more than others? Do not even publicans so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. The problem that we have in putting this in practice is pride, like we see in the case of Devayani. Pride and resentment, that is the problem. And the solution to this problem is first understanding this law of life, that nothing comes to us if we haven't been responsible to it. That's the law of life. We may not see it through our ignorance, but cause and effect is a precise relationship, a mathematically precise relationship. And if we are facing the effects, then the causes must have been sown. Understanding that is one thing. And secondly, what helps is realizing that in reality, we are untouched by troubles, we are untouched by praise or blame, by honor or disgrace. This is variously explained by Sri Krishna in the 14th chapter, where he gives the condition of one who has attained to this self-knowledge, that is knowledge of self which is unaffected by praise or blame, heat and cold, honor and dishonor. The condition of the characteristics of such a sage, he says, is this. Who is of equal mind in pain and pleasure, self-centered, to whom a lump of earth, a gold, lump of earth, a stone or gold are as one, who is of equal mind with those who love or dislike, constant, the same whether praised or blamed, equal minded in honor and disgrace, and the same towards friendly and unfriendly side, engaging only in necessary actions. Such an one has surmounted the illusions of nature. And we have that nice story in the life of Buddha. You may all know, but it's good to recollect, where Buddha is camping with his disciples in one of the villages, and a man comes and spits on the face of Lord Buddha. And Buddha calmly wipes his face and says, "What next? What else do you want to say?" So Buddha's disciples are deeply offended. His disciple Ananda is angry and he says, "This is too much. This person must be punished. We cannot tolerate such things. If he is not punished, everybody will start doing such things." So Buddha turns to him and says, "You keep silent. He has not offended me, the person who spit on my face, he has not offended me. You are the one who are offending me now. He is a new person, a stranger. He must have heard from some people that there is this person who is camping in the village, who is an atheist, and who is misleading people, who is a revolutionary, a corrupter, and so on. And he has formed a notion of me, an idea of me. He has not spit on me, he has spit on his notion. He has spit on his idea of me, because he does not know me at all. Without knowing me, how can he spit on me? If you think deeply, he has spit on his own mind. I am not a part of it. And I can see that this poor man must have something else to say, because this spitting is a way of saying something. There are intense moments in deep love, intense anger, hate, prayer, and so on, when language is impotent. And you have to do something to express yourself. So when you are intensely angry, you hit the person, spit on him, you say, instead of saying something. So I can understand him. He must have something more to say. So I am asking him, what next? So this person is deeply shocked. He goes away. He doesn't know what to do. He can't sleep in the night. So the story says that when you meet an enlightened one, it brings about a change in your life. And one such change is in this person, he doesn't know what to do. First time he is facing such a circumstance. So he repents deeply, next day morning goes, falls at the feet of Buddha and starts crying, saying, Buddha says, what next? What else do you want to say? So please forgive me, I've done great wrong. So Buddha says, forgive? But I am not the same person on whom you spit yesterday. Just like the Ganges goes on flowing, just like I am also changed since yesterday. Every man is like a river. The man you spit upon is no longer here. I look just like him, but I am not the same. Much has passed in this past 24 hours. The river has flowed so much, and I cannot forgive you because I have no grudge against you. You are also new. I can see that you are not the same person. The person who came yesterday had fierce anger, was anger himself. He spit on me, whereas you are bowing down at my feet. So you are also not the same person. So the man who spit and the man on whom the one spit, both are not there. So where is the question of forgiveness? So both are no more. So come closer, let us talk of something else, he says. So just a nice story which we are just reading this, we are discussing this to bring to our mind such illustrious examples which we have. We may not have the capacity and power to at once implement these things and at once become like them, but we ought to start practicing this, because the incentive that we have is whether we will choose to have friends in the future or whether we will choose to have enemies in the future. That's the incentive. That's in a way an enlightened selfishness, so to say. And evil is, in that sense, the reaping of the effects of our own wrongdoings. Reaping of effects of our own wrong, it doesn't come from outside. The seeds are inside, it just sprouts and expresses itself. So if we try to restore, if we try to avoid the restoration, then we are creating more causes, we are resisting it, resisting evil. And if we reconcile soon, if we reconcile quickly and cleanse our mind and heart and not harbor ill feelings but consciously develop goodwill towards the other person, then we are quickly converting that relationship of animosity to one of friendship, to one of goodwill, and we are converting that person and the relationship that we have with him into one which will bear good results and in friendliness and happiness to all. So this is pure Vedic teaching. The distortion is what we find today, wherein one is the relationship that we have with others, the harm that comes to us. This is what we discussed. Evil can be seen in other ways. Misfortunes, diseases, calamities that happen, that may not come from others, but it happens to us. These also, the same rule applies, that unless we haven't set in motion causes which will result in such effects which we have to face, it wouldn't have come to us. And in this case, resisting evil would be running to astrologer, doing this puja, that puja to ward off evil, to ensure that evil consequences doesn't come to us. But what does Buddha say? Not in the sky, nor in the depths of the sea, nor in mountain clefts is there a place on earth where a man can be to escape the consequences of his evil deed. So irrespective of what homas or havanas or pujas or anything that you do to ensure that consequences of your past action in terms of evil does not come to you, what finally happens is, even if you are able to stall the effect for a while, it will rebound on you with increased force, and then you'll have to face it with more dire consequences. Which is why in Sankhya Karika, sage Kapila, very first or second verse, he says that when troubles torment a person, the normal tendency of a person is to seek for answers outside, seek for solutions outside. Do this, do that, ensure that this doesn't happen, ensure that that doesn't happen. That's the normal tendency. But sage says, Kapila says, he keeps on doing this and finally understands that when he does this, either the solution to that problem is not guaranteed, or when the solution is found, the solution becomes temporary solution alone. It's not a permanent solution. And therefore, the mind is led towards jignasa. That is, seeking spiritual knowledge, spiritual wisdom. Because it is in understanding these laws of life that we can find a permanent solution to the problems that we face. So, the crux of the matter, to summarize, seems to be this. It is a law. World is not by accident. What happens in our life is not by accident, not by chance. Neither is it the work of some God who sits and manipulates and controls, whom we have to pray and appease and so on. What is reality is that there is an ever-active law, the law which tends towards harmony, a tendency towards restoring equilibrium, a tendency in the universe to restore equilibrium. And everything that we do, that we think, that we feel, that we speak, produces various effects. Just like a stone dropped in a pond produces ripples which far reaching ripples. Similarly, everything, every moment, we are creating these causes. And it is not lost when we die, but every smallest thing is noted, recorded, available, and produces its consequences. This is that restoration of equilibrium. So this law of life, law of harmony, must be understood. And since we are all aspects of one life, one spirit, one consciousness, everything that we do is affecting others for good or ill. And as Shukracharya says, if it is good, there is a reward. As in, like, it produces harmonious effects and we feel the effects of it. If there is evil, it produces its own effects, and that restoration is what we feel as pain, sorrow, misfortune and so on. So there is this, I'll just read one small portion from Secret Doctrine, and with that we will close and take up any questions. It is not therefore karma that rewards or punishes. It is not therefore karma that rewards or punishes, but it is we who reward or punish ourselves according to whether we work with, through and along with nature, abiding by the laws on which that harmony depends, or break them. And further it says, verily, there is not an accident in our life. There is not an accident in our life, not a misshapen day or a misfortune that could not be traced back to our own doings in this or in another life. If one breaks the law of harmony, or as a theosophical writer expresses it, the loss of life, one must be prepared to fall into the chaos one has oneself produced. For according to the same writer, the only conclusion one can come to is that these laws of life are their own avengers, and consequently that every avenging angel is only a typified representation of their reaction.